That's the 411. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield, producer of 411 Teen. Joining me this hour as 411 Teen panelists, I welcome the IB contingency. All the students today are from the IB program at Rickert High School. All of them are juniors, and I welcome them. Joining me at the roundtable is Joey Cardenas. Joey enjoys broadcasting. Can't read that right. Broadcasting and tennis.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, glad to have you. Abraham Khalil, he also enjoys soccer and programming.
Very much.
Okay. Shaquille Lewis is into environmental engineering, art, and music.
Thanks for having me.
Sudhashu Rath enjoys computer programming, math, computer science, and gaming.
Hey, what's up?
And Aishwara Satyavarapu, known as Ice. That's easier, isn't it? Okay. Also a student at Rickert's, into tennis, science, and math. And so nice, she's done it twice. I'm always glad to have her back, Sonia Cool. Sonia is in dance, science, and music.
Thanks, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I look forward to talking with you all. I mean, you Rickert students, IB students, are one of my favorite panelists, so welcome again so much to 411 Teen. Standardized testing is the new silver bullet for public education. Tests are popular because they can be used to enforce standards established by a governing body. For over three decades, the SAT has been used as a way to screen potentially successful students for college entrance. Often referred to as the big test, the SAT is a real rite of passage. 44% of the kids who graduated from high school took the SAT. A passing grade on the FCAT, or Florida Comprehensive Assessment Test, is required to receive a high school diploma from a public school in the state of Florida. The FCAT is a standardized test examining complex problems, solving in reading and math. More than a third of the state's 10th graders at one point failed the reading test. Standardized tests are an integral component of today's education. In many cases, they are the determining factor for the future. Yet numerous problems have been associated with standardized tests. Women and minorities tend to receive significantly lower scores on the SAT. Failure rate on the FCAT is also significantly lower for minorities. Private schools, however, do not require the FCAT. Having to pass standardized tests is nothing new, but the pressure can be overwhelming, considering significant influence on one's future. How do you feel about standardized testing, Abraham?
Oh, well, I mean, the standards which they ask on, for example, FCAT, I don't think that the standards are unreasonable. Mm-hmm. Rather, I think there should be standards which should and can be met by the majority of the students who take it. A lot of them just, I mean, I've seen kids literally sleep through the FCAT. Both kids who are smart and finished early and then those who just don't care about the FCAT and end up getting a bad score.
Mm-hmm. Let me hear from some of them.
I feel like a lot of kids have potential that isn't reflected when they take the FCAT because many kids just assume that they already know this stuff, so they don't try. So, I mean, standardized tests kind of have that, like, drawback. And with the SAT, I mean, for some people who are really intelligent, they're just not good test takers. And most of the time, their scores don't really, like, reflect the intelligence that they actually have.
You agree, Joey? Where do you sit on this?
I can agree on that point, like how she was saying how it doesn't really reflect really your personality. Like, for me, I'm a terrible test taker. And, well, when I would take the SAT, because I recently took it, I mean, I felt sweaty and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, it doesn't really reflect what I do because I like being a leader, I guess. And you can't really show that in the standardized testing. You can't really show that to a college, like, off of, like, just a bunch of numbers saying that how good you are is something's really going to have – like affect your life, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, something like SAT is testing specific things like, you know,
math, science,
yeah, and exactly. Yeah, I mean, right. It's not necessarily testing leadership.
Yeah, but like in a way, that's more of like where you want to prevail in. I don't think that test is really providing that for me. Mm-hmm. And I guess I should do something else I really want. But like, I mean, it's standard. So, I mean, I guess.
I mean, there's no real perfect way to test a specific person on everything.
True, because a person is a person, and you can't take 16 or 17 years and place it on one test date. You can't just go and tell me that the drama that might have happened the day before the test didn't affect what you got on the exam. And I don't believe that it truly shows full meritocracy. And all these other factors come in, and we're looking at children here. Mm-hmm. We're not looking at 50-year-old men or women taking this with life experiences. So definitely it's a good consensus on looking at standards, but I think it could be done better.
Okay. Shaquille and Ice, how do both of you feel about it?
I think Shidanchi has a point that, I mean, we should have standardized tests, but I think the system, how they use it is what they need to, you know, change. I mean, if someone has something that happened the day before, I mean, shouldn't we take that into account before they take that test? Also, you have the idea now how standardized tests, how teachers are being based off of that. But that's not fair because, I mean, each teacher doesn't have the same group of students. One teacher may have a bad group of students who don't care, and then you have the teacher who has students who actually care, who actually try. And then that teacher that has the bad group of students, their job is in jeopardy.
Mm.
While
indeed.
The other one, and they while get, the other one, their job is fine. So
they get punishment for what they cannot truly control. And I don't believe that's a very
good
system.
Very valid point.
In my opinion, I think that there are some drawbacks to standardized testing, but in all honesty, like, there is no exact way that we can test everyone in the same way, like Abraham was saying.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, like everyone was saying, there could be improvements that could be made that would help test some other people's abilities and different things, not just reading, writing, and math.
And I think all of you have raised some really good points because this test has so much influence on what you do tomorrow, you know?
Yeah.
And I think you raised a good point, Joey, in that we need to have a composite of things as opposed to just tests. I mean, like you said, your skills are about leadership and you're into that. So you need something that is going to reflect all of that. And it doesn't even have to be a standardized test. I guess my next question to you would be, how many of you have taken standardized tests, and what was your experience? Now, I know, Joy, you said you just got finished taking what the SAT.
Yes, I actually want to pull up a point how I'm assuming all of you guys went to public school. Well, I went to a private school at McClay, and our standardized testing, it was practically optional. So, like, the fact that it's like, that's what I kind of liked, because McClay kind of focused on, they pushed you to certain areas, because they'd ask you what you'd like to do, and, like, they try to push you into those certain areas. Well, when I came to the public schools, like, they made you take the FCAT and all that stuff. I mean, I had nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. FCAT, like, yeah. But, I mean, it was a different experience.
Different.
It's a different experience, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same here. I also went to private school when I was, like, in elementary. And we did have testing, and it wasn't optional, but it actually tested you on all of your subjects. So it's, like, what you learn throughout the school year. And they weren't necessarily, like, final exams. Like, it was throughout the whole school. But it made a lot of sense. And I felt like kids, like, felt a lot better when they were taking those tests compared to something like the SAT or FCAT, where, like I took the SAT in 7th grade, and I took PSAT recently, and, like, I get really nervous, and I feel like I do my worst on the day of the test, and every time I'm doing a practice test, I do, like, so much better.
And it just might even be that anxiety of test taking.
There's so much pressure on you when you're taking, because it's like, oh, the SAT, it's dependent on your life. Like, this test score, it's going to be on your transcript, and everyone's going to look at it. So it's kind of important, but you don't want to be stressed out because that messes up your score.
Yeah. And I've just had an experience. I took a standardized test.
What did you take?
The PSAT, actually.
Oh, okay.
And on one section, actually. I kept the bubbling till maybe the last 3 minutes, and I accidentally shifted all my answers down one.
Oh, no.
Murdered.
On that, yeah. So that's definitely one problem. Mm-hmm. But I've also taken the online FCAT. That was much better because I did not there was a lesser a chance for me to make that transcribing process mm-hmm. because I just could click on with the computer mm-hmm. what I wanted to choose. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I mean, with computers, I mean, then again, you have a lot of problems with, you know, I mean, there was I don't remember which school it was specifically, but I think they had a problem with the computers themselves, and there were some yeah. kids who had to take the FCAT late, yeah, which is also one of the problems.
Yeah. So yeah. The system's not perfect yet, but we're going ways. So
I also took the FCAT, but I mean, I think they should have standardized tests, but I mean, it should be to a certain extent because I mean, everyone should have the basics down, but as Joey said, I mean, he's not necessarily going to go into that certain areas that they're testing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, to a certain extent, you should give that child that freedom to have a test that's based on something that you know he wants to do, and that'll give a college a better knowledge of yeah. if that child comes to do that major in school, you know that they'll be able to.
But the other side of that is standardized tests really don't reflect how well you're going to do in school.
I feel
you know?
Like,
yeah, go right ahead.
I feel like it poses a huge disadvantage for a lot of kids because someone could be extremely intelligent, not necessarily in academics, but again, like a great leader or someone who's really like athletic and bound to be professional, and they might not do that well in SAT, and then just because they didn't do so great on the SAT, they won't get into the college they want
and
to.
And bad test scores do decrease morale.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you know the stuff, but something happened and that really shouldn't do.
Well, don't you think that what we're doing is we're reducing people to a score? If we put all this all this value
numbers.
On this test,
numbers.
You know, so it's about what score did you get and what score did you – and it's not about you, the person, and what you bring to whatever school it is. It's just about that score that you got.
Mm-hmm. And I think the numbers are really not a good – way to characterize people
mm-hmm.
because maybe you're labeled as – maybe you take a test and you're labeled as 95%. Well, what's the 5% that you're missing? Have you really understood the fundamentals of what you're doing, or will you forget what you learned that year 10 years later?
Another good point. What criteria do you think should be used – to determine promotion, and now I'm talking about in high school, you know, going from 10th grade to 11th grade, 11th grade to 12th grade. Do you think that we should place so much emphasis on the FCAT? And I think you all have kind of answered this because you mentioned, Sonia, what about that student that really they could be an A student? They may do very well in their own individual classes, but when it comes to taking the test, they experience all kind of test anxiety. They get stressed out. They get tight, and they don't do well on the test. So
I feel like standardized tests are like always going to exist, but I feel like in order to move on to the next grade, as long as you either like pass your classes or you're just improving while you go like as like in general, not necessarily mm-hmm. going from like C to B to A, but mm-hmm. just in general, like you're improving and you're learning what you have to know and like you're doing decent on your exams. It's not necessarily did you pass the FCAT, because again, like we have classes like physics and chemistry, and those things aren't necessarily tested on the FCAT, so you can't base like your FCAT score on whether you did well that year in your high school and you should go on.
Okay.
I believe that for promotion, that students as should be evaluated over the whole year.
Okay.
On their performance, on their types of behavior, on their interests, and how much they have grown in that time frame.
Mm-hmm.
Field observation of a certain group of students. Maybe that could be better.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's a really good point, actually. I mean, that's kind of like what IB does. I mean, we have all of these internal assessments throughout the year where we have to demonstrate a specific amount of knowledge or development. And they, I mean, they
and
really
CAS,
track that.
CAS yeah. also. But exactly. also, if you fail your IB tests, one of them, you fall short of 24 marks, you're gone. That,
yes.
That's also...
I mean,
a major point.
But I mean,
but
if
that's
you,
not is, well, but it's not graded the same way, is it?
To
IB
to a certain extent.
To a certain extent. But there, I guess there's more subjectivity in there.
Yeah,
is
exactly.
what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Right,
like,
right.
Like
let,
with the,
let me just ask you to hold your thoughts for 1 minute. I'll get right back at you. We're going to take a brief break. Next week on 411 Teen, today's parents must be bilingual if they want to communicate effectively with the teenagers in their lives. They have to talk the talk before they walk the walk. Dr. Barbara Greenberg, the teen doctor for Psychology Today, does both. Dr. Greenberg provides an informative and insightful resource for parents who are continually trying to figure out how to communicate with their teens. Tune in to 411 Teen, Sunday afternoon at 2 on 88.9 FM. Many states in the U.S. require public schools to administer statewide achievement tests at various levels. The findings may determine whether students proceed to the next grade level, and in the case of high school standards, whether they graduate. Yet, one can attend a private school and circumvent this requirement. You're tuned into 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. We are looking at and discussing standardized testing. Before we went on break, I know I had to interrupt both of you, Joey and Abraham. Do you want to continue what you were saying?
I guess a fun point you can make with the internal assessment is that it's kind of based on what you want to research. It's like what you want, what you find interesting yeah. to, and that's what you want to share. And like, mm-hmm. I guess that can reflect on how you're seen as a student in the IB program. I kind of like just wanted to make that point.
Okay.
I mean, I guess that takes away the whole, you know, I mean, IB is like individual where you test, you know, not just specific, I should say, I mean, they do specific test specific things, but I mean, you take away that factor of anxiety to a certain extent because you're choosing a subject that
you're comfortable with.
Yeah, exactly. That you're mm-hmm. comfortable with, that you like. But in the meantime, I mean, it still does have those weaknesses of which you, I mean, it's really hard to take away those weaknesses of placing a number on a person. Because, again, it depends on your score on that internal yeah. assessment or your score on that IB exam that labels you.
Yeah. And frankly, I don't think many people like being recognized as a number.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Actually, I think the IB program still kind of places a number on you. Because my mom, she was looking at, like, universities abroad, like this university, Imperial College, and they were saying you had to get a certain, like, a 5 on this or a 7 on this certain IB test in order for them to actually consider you to give you credit. So in a sense, you're still getting – you still have a number being given to you. It's just the IB program, I think, it allows more creativity because, you know, you have the EEs. You know, you pick what you want. And you really have a feel of what you want. Because I have IB art, and we actually pick what we want to do art about. Mm-hmm. And that allows us to be more creative. And I think that's something that it's kind of lacking in some of these other tests that we have.
I noticed for, like, SAT and everything, when it's basically like you're taking a group of people and then you're saying, oh, this is your number, and this is what college you're going into because you got this number only. And it's kind of... I mean, it's kind of like it's not good that they're testing that way. Like you guys were saying, it's not helping you be creative, and it's not helping you show like who you actually are. Rather than just it's just testing on you on like some things that may be useful, but maybe like not exactly what you want to do.
Yes, Shakira.
Also, well, this is kind of something sad because we have. You know, kids who study really hard for these tests, and some of them do really well. But, I mean, when they go to university, some of them can't cope because they were focused so much. You know, they have to be on their own. They have to start taking care of themselves. They don't have their parents around. Yeah. So then they can't cope. I mean, you have universities where you hear about shootings and all that because, you know, some of these kids just snap. And I think that's another thing that's a problem with these standardized tests.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pressure that's put on those kids.
And also, those that studying might be just pure memorization and not understanding the material.
Not being able to apply it, really.
And you go out into the real field, and you might have been the 100% grade student in your school all your life, but you're out there, and the guy who got 30s or 40s might actually beat you.
Do better.
Yeah. Although I feel recently, like, you know, maybe in the past decade, like, colleges have started not to just look at your test scores because I think they realize that you're just putting a label on someone. Because, like, these days, a lot of, like, the, like, Ivy Leagues and regular schools, they want you to be a well-rounded person. Yeah. They don't want to see you as a person that just sits in your room and studies all day. Mm-hmm. They want you to go out and interact and volunteer. And I feel like that's also what's really good about IB because they're pushing you towards that direction. And, like, I mean, I personally don't like standardized tests, but I understand why they exist. I mean, you can't just, like, tell someone, oh, you're good at this, so you should go here. I mean, like, you have to, because you're dealing with so many people, you have to find some way to, like, you know, sort them out. Yeah.
A couple of years ago in Hernando County, some students received money for their test scores. The county made a local decision to reward students. I think it was $50 and $30 increments, depending upon their test score. I want you to respond to that. I mean, are we paying for performance? Should money be used as an incentive or a reward to bribe students? I mean, it seems like maybe the school system was bribing students. I mean, what's your take on it?
I don't believe the school system should bribe students to go for higher grades. My reason being is the standardized tests, they were made oddly for some reason, and that reason maybe is to separate this guy who goes to super easy school and gets all A's and this other guy who goes to super hard school and gets all F's. And you really can't distinguish between the between each other. But once you start bribing kids, they go into the focus of just getting that money. They're not going into the mindset of exploring a subject or exploring this or that. They just want that $50. Mm-hmm. And after they seize that $50, that's over, game over. I don't care about this anymore. Why should I care? I got my $50. So, no, I don't believe that they should
either. Either way, I mean, they still learn the material that needs to be learned.
They might learn it, but do they understand it?
Well, I mean, we don't really know the actual whole story behind this. Like, it can be seen as an incentive to work hard.
But I feel... keep going.
Like, I mean, isn't that kind of like why our parents work in a way? So we can get money to provide for our family. It's like you work really hard and you're working really hard to get that money. I mean, can it seem like that way?
But you learn it, but it's not helpful in the world because, it's basically like you learning a bunch of vocabulary words just for this test, and then after the test, you're just going to forget them.
Yeah.
Plus, what if you get into the habit of getting $50? I get an A on this, I get 50 bucks. Mm-hmm. And then you go off to some other school. You get an A, and you don't get 50 bucks. So what happens then? You feel something. Something happens in your heart, and it's like, why didn't I get paid? And the motivation might fall down very, very low. That's so
true. I think
we'll go around the table, okay? Well,
there's more important things than just the test. I mean, you're supposed to teach them values also. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're bribing those kids, you're taking away the value. I mean, my mom, she'd laugh at the idea of giving me money for grades. I'm expected to get that. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, I do chores. I don't get – that's what I'm supposed to do. And then that instills in me something that I'm supposed to do, because when I go out in the real world, I might do something amazing and
not get any recognition for it. Right.
Okay, so I have 2 points to make. First, about whether you really understand it. Like, even if your incentive is money, which I believe is kind of, like, morally wrong, if you end up pulling off an A, that doesn't mean you understood it. Because an A isn't just a, oh, look, I got an A and I'm getting $50. You have to understand the material to do well. And then second of all, I feel like the fact that the county did this in the first place just proves their point that these are just scores because they want them to do well just mm-hmm. to be labeled as mm-hmm. being smart or be able to get into college. So I feel like the fact that they gave money for these kids to do better just proves our point that standardized test scores, they're labeled and they aren't as effective as people hope them to be.
Well, doesn't that defeat the whole purpose of IB and scholarships? I mean, think about it. A lot of times, like IB, right, we work here in IB so that we can get that scholarship at the end. And that scholarship is what provides the funding for college. I mean, we're still getting money for it.
But personally, I'm not thinking about that while I'm at school.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
just all the education that you're getting throughout the years.
When you work hard, there's always a reward. Yeah. I mean, like, no matter what it is. But I'm saying, like, the fact that they're offering them and telling them that if you do this, I'm going to straight out hand you 50 bucks, that's wrong. Like, scholarships is something different. Scholarships is when you get something for your hard work that you're not doing it just to get that scholarship. You did it for yourself, and in the end, you proved to be a good person.
Okay. Let me talk to you about understanding material. It could be rote memorization. You could be given a list of addition facts that you have to do. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's like 3 + 3 and you remember that it's 6. But then you're asked the opposite way, what's 6 - 3? And that wasn't on the list to memorize. I don't know. You don't get what 3 + 3 is really.
The whole
is.
Concept.
Yeah. You 3 apples plus 3 apples. I'm taking them and putting them together. That understanding that is much more important than memorizing 3 + 3 = 6.
I understand, but especially for a standardized test such as the SAT, like, that's not possible. Like, because you're not always going to get the same vocabulary mm-hmm. words. You're not going to get a passage that you know about, and you don't know what math questions you're going to get. So, like, that's why it's a standardized test, because you're testing a general concept in different ways. Like, so you can't really do that with the SAT. I don't feel like, because, like, I mean, I don't even personally know how to study that well for the SAT. Like, I'm just taking practice tests over and over again mm-hmm. to get used to it. Like, but even for FCAT, like, you can't really study for this. You can't memorize anything for this. That's what standardized tests pretty much are. Like, if a test in school, like, for psychology, I'll memorize things and do mm-hmm. it. I admit, I might not understand all the time. But especially for standardized tests, I don't think that's possible. But I get your point.
Standardized tests, they're used, like, for overall, from your childhood onwards, they build, like, reading. Aptitude. It's not like you can sit there for 1 month in, like, 3 weeks and learn everything you can't need for reading mm-hmm. and just get a 800 on the SAT reading. It's over time, and as you grow up, you develop like skills that later reflect on the SAT. And
But also you can do it through memorization. Some parts of it.
Some of it.
No.
I mean, the vocabulary.
I mean, you have to
sitting
learn vocabulary
down for a month before the test and memorizing. That definitely has been shown that it works.
I hear what both of you are saying. I mean, I do hear, you know, both of you have some valid points. For example, the FCAT is an integral part of the state of Florida's system of school improvement accountability. Schools are graded A through F on the FCAT scores and the exam attendance. Schools receive increased funding depending upon their scores. High stakes may force the school to desperate measures. One of the problems has been they may teach the test. How do you feel about this tactic? You know, this has been an ongoing issue with a number of schools, whether like they're teaching. Oh, yeah, go right ahead, son.
I feel like, honestly, FCAT, it doesn't work, and I feel like it's not a valuable way to determine how, quote-unquote, smart a school is, because if I'm not mistaken, I think Florida is on the lower side of education in the U.S., and I mean, like, I feel like FCAT has a lot to do with that because it really doesn't test you. Mm-hmm. And, like, if you get an F, if you're an F school and you, like, for example, I know, like, until recently since they changed the rules about how you grade a school, mm-hmm. Rickards has been really, really low, like, grade.
Exactly.
Except mm-hmm. there are plenty of smart kids in that, like, school. It doesn't make sense. And, I mean, now that they changed it, I feel like the way they do it now is a lot more fair and mm-hmm. a little bit better of, like, a way to grade a school. But, I feel like that's proof that FCAT, like, yeah. the way you determine FCAT and the scores and the way it reflects the school, it's not efficient.
The way that we do it now is, I mean, look at the grades now in Leon County schools. We have, I think, two Bs and three As on the high schools, I think it is, if I'm not mistaken.
I think they're two A's now. Yeah.
Two A's and three
B's. Let me ask you to hold your thoughts because it's time for us to take a brief break. And we're going to take a brief break, and we'll get right back at you, and we'll continue this discussion. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. Ethicist Corner presents daily dilemmas that life hurls our way. How do you feel about the media publishing photos of soldiers killed in war against the family's wishes?
It's wrong.
Okay. Why? I mean, okay, let's elaborate on that.
It's wrong, I believe, is because that's the family's property. Right? That's their property. Their position on that is solely their own. It was a family member. The rest of the world doesn't need to see any of that.
Go ahead. Oh, okay. Well, I mean, these are people who they went out and they defended their country, mm-hmm. and there's no reason why we shouldn't respect them. You know, if their families don't want, you know, their photo online or in some magazines or whatever, I mean, it's just wrong, morally wrong to put it up. I mean, why would you do that? Just for the entertainment of others? That's a bit sketchy.
Yeah, I think I agree with what they're saying to an extent. I mean, if the family doesn't want you to do it, then you shouldn't. But at the same time, the media need to show what war really looks like. I mean, we don't have to have this aggrandized idea of what war is. You know, think it's, oh, it's so great. When mm-hmm. I go there, I'm going to come back a hero. I mean, people need to see what war is really like.
Because we're removed from it. We don't really.
Yeah. So, I mean, the idea of the family, that's the issue, really. I mean, because
there are family, like, I completely agree with you, but I mean, like, the fact that the family doesn't want it there, I'm sure there are some families who do want, because some families see it as like respect to like look yeah. what look what my son or look at what my daughter right. did. But if families don't want to put it out there, I don't think they should. I mean, it just kind of shows that like in this life we have no privacy of anything. Like, I mean, if a family doesn't want their loved one to be shown, then like give them some respect, as Abraham said, and like respect their decision.
Ice, what do you think? I want to hear from all of you. And I can come back. I'll go to Joy, whichever.
Okay, well, I think I agree with you guys. I don't think it is right to just go against the family's will and just publicize mm-hmm. the picture or, like, whatever of your family member that you don't want it to be put out. And it's right, like Abraham was saying, it's your own family's property and it's what your family, like, I guess it's a memory, even good or bad. But to an extent, yeah, it does. Like Sonia was saying, it does show, like, respect.
Mm-hmm.
Because it shows, oh, my family member was in this, and they helped defend the country.
Did you have a comment you
wanted
to say? And I'll come to Joy.
Well, I mean, we're talking about the media doing that, right? But then you also have the media of the – when I look on TV, you see these commercials for Join the Navy and Join the Marines. And, you know, it seems so great and everyone's so buff and amazing. They're running around doing cool things. And then I'm going to have that image in my head. I'm going to think, oh, I want to go join the Marines. And then when I get to the battlefield – just dead bodies. I don't know how to handle it. I come back with PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I don't think that's something that someone really wants to handle. You need to see what it really is.
Well, I mean, then that's when you post photos of people who you do get consent from. But, you know, if the family says no,
well,
stop.
Okay.
I think that's true.
What do you think, Joy? I haven't heard from you.
I guess, of course, I agree with everyone that it's morally wrong to post a photo of a family that didn't want to, but it's meant to show the true reality of war. I mean, if we don't, like, it seems like it'd be like another Vietnam incident. It's like the public mm-hmm. wasn't informed. The public didn't know about, like, the inhumane acts back there. We need to show this. We need to show it to the people, but to an extent, like, you need to hold back. Like, there's a line you don't want to cross about posting what you need to post out there. But.
And all families, I don't think, would oppose. I mean, there would be some families that will say, okay. But let's show those ones that you don't need to go against someone's will and do that. So
I think that, you know, these people who go out and defend us, I mean, they're not just defending the people who they love. They're defending everyone.
The country.
Including the people who run the media. So I think that in return they should at least have, you know.
Respect for
exactly.
other people. Yeah.
It's not like they're saying, oh, I'm defending this person and this person, but not you guys.
So then what I hear you saying is it's okay if the families are in agreement with it. That ultimately we should respect the wishes of the family.
Actually, I have a scenario here.
We can't take your scenario. We're out of time, but I certainly will have you back. It's been a pleasure. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. We are having a great time here. Today, I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and I have students from the Rickards IB program. And Abraham, I had to interrupt you, so you may continue. You were talking about scores and grades, and I think, okay.
I believe we have high schools in the county. I think it's 2 A's and mm-hmm. 3 B's,
mm-hmm.
Something like that. So, but, I mean, if you look at it, I mean, that's grade inflation. There's no... I mean, how are we going to judge what's average? At this point, average has become a B or an A, the way that we grade the schools now. And that's another problem. I mean, when people get to college, I mean, I have a teacher who's telling us all the time, when you get to college, it's different. I mean, you have A and B students who are getting C's and then complaining, why am I getting a C? Well, the standards have changed.
mm-hmm.
And, I mean, going back to the topic that we were talking about earlier, about... how a school is graded, I mean, the way that they used to do it, I mean, I agree that it is more fair at this point because at Rickards we do have a lot of smart kids and there are a lot of other kids who just don't care about school and that's, I mean, that's always been a problem wherever you go, but, I mean, especially at Rickards. But overall, it's just, again, you're labeling a school instead of a person with a number. And that's just the way that things are. I mean, there's not really a better way to do it.
I don't think it's fair either, because our teachers are getting evaluated based upon that grade. And one of my teachers, he doesn't like that way at all, because he works really hard and he makes sure that we understand stuff and that we get enough work to do so we can go to the best of our abilities. But what if he has a bad group of students sometime?
Or what if the students don't feel good that day? Okay, identified a number of things that may influence your test.
Yeah, and the poor guy might get fired just for that.
Yeah.
So.
But then again, there are, like, you're right, but then there are teachers who are horrible, but they're there because they have tenure, and they won't leave and leave, like, spaces for teachers that could be brilliant. Like, I mean, there's always a good and a bad side to a situation, but I was thinking about it. Maybe a good way to, like, just determine whether a teacher is actually really good is to, like, test the students beforehand, like on something like standardized tests in the beginning of the year.
A pre-test.
And then at the end of the year, see if they actually learned anything or if they improved.
So you're talking about pre- and post-test
situation. Yeah, if you have kids that have moved nowhere, then you know it's not the teacher's fault, because obviously they haven't, it's not like the teacher's been sitting there doing nothing. Mm-hmm. But if they do improve, then obviously the teacher's doing the right thing.
And, I don't think it's fair, but for the teachers that are maybe lacking in not really teaching much, I think that's the administration of that school should take some procedures to take care of that. Maybe one school I've read about, they actually videotape certain times of teaching, of actual classroom interaction, and it's hidden camera, so there's no bias, so the teacher won't act up and do something like that. Maybe do a couple of assessments like that and see how the natural environment in the classroom is over the year. And base a teacher off of that, but definitely don't base anything off of standardized tests.
The point that we brought up, how they changed how we grade the grading system now, honestly, I don't think it really shows anything at this moment, because in the past, there were plenty of other IB students when it was the same old system. I'm sure they were as smart as we are, or even smarter, but that doesn't show it. But now that the change has become fair, so I think for it to really actually show anything, you have to do the period of time and then truly see if it's actually changing, if it's actually a system that works, if it's actually working. I mean, if it's just, you know, just another system. I mean, in the past it was working. It
worked fine.
In the past, I mean, we had the same, as I said, the same students. So it doesn't really show anything yet. And also, I think, because I saw something about teaching abroad, how, you know, they had requirements for teachers, and it was really high standards. But also, they in the classroom would have teachers with experience, and they would sit there with teachers that didn't have as much experience and show them. And they would actually sit there while they were teaching, not like coming periodically, but they'll be there
continuously.
Yeah. And so they can actually give them like really good pointers. So they're actually making sure they're actually being a good teacher, not just walking in randomly. Because if you do that, then the teacher could just change what he's doing or what she's doing. So.
Right. That's true. For decades, did you have a comment? Oh, okay. For decades, the SAT has been used as a way to screen potentially successful students for college entrance. Often referred to as the big test, the SAT is a rite of passage. 44% of the kids who graduate from high school take the SAT. Numerous problems have been associated with the test. Women and minorities tend to receive significantly lower scores on the test. More and more universities and parents are questioning the validity and fairness of the test. Research indicates that the test does not predict the success of potential college students. What we have found that does have an influence on how well you do is your zip code, your zip code, or the income of your family, okay? And that seems to have a real impact on how well someone does on standardized tests. Yeah. You look like you want to say something, Abraham. Go right ahead. I'll come to you too, Ice.
Okay. Well, I mean, there are a lot of kids who, I mean, they might have, for example, students with poor families.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of times they have both parents at work, for example. They're not going to be able to sit down and help the student or get involved in their grades in school, the activities, you know. Then there are other students, you know, the ones who are wealthy, who they'll either have one or potentially even both parents at home who can help them and get involved. And those students, you know, as you said, have shown to do much better.
And now another thing is, how many of you took the preparation class or are going to take the preparation course, like a Kaplan or something?
I took one too. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. But, you know, it's expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the point I was going to make. It's very expensive. Now, it does show that it does help your score, but it's expensive. So what about those students who can't take it?
To be honest, like, from personal experience, I feel like they don't help.
They don't at all.
It's just a way to get money. I really, really feel that way because, like, I took it and – like, again, you can't learn something unless you learn it yourself. You can't have someone, like, you might have someone to aid you, but you can't, nothing can be absorbed unless you understand it, unless you learn it by yourself. And, like, I mean, some people walk into SAT just without studying at all, and I feel like, you know, that's kind of your problem. You know that this is a huge deal, so you need to study. I'm not saying sit in your room for hours, but at least, like, do a couple of practice tests. So I feel like you can definitely do those on your own, and, like, just because you take a preparation course does not mean you're guaranteed 2,400.
Yeah, they help you. They give you, like, tips and tactics to, like, help.
Exactly.
They'll be like, oh, in the reading section, like, underline this part or, like, use this way to help you answer the questions.
Something but, that you could literally just look online.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And it doesn't really help because all they do is they give you, like, they just bombard you with, like, a bajillion practice questions. And that's all they do, and they just time you, just help you with timing. But you can do that on your own yourself. And when I took it, I mean, I did learn, I guess, some tricks. But for the most part, it's like, oh, I could have learned that. I could have searched this up on Google, and I would have gotten this myself.
Oh, okay.
And, I mean, to an extent, they do help, but not that much. They don't like, dramatically increase your score.
Then again, it's another part of your life, that another episode of your life, and the SAT is the aptitude test. You might think it's useless, but something did go into your head. And through that experience, just even a slight little tip the guy sitting next to you maybe shared, that could just help you so much.
That's a tip a book could easily give to you.
Yeah, like, it's not like – I'm not saying that's useless. It's not like completely useless or – it was – like I didn't mind going to it. It helped me a little, but – for the most part, we could have done that on our own. Like Sonia was saying, we can take like several practice tests. We can time ourselves. We can look stuff up. There's a lot of books that say the same thing.
It depends on your will. It depends on what you want to do. Lot of these rich kids will have like a test and like might take preparation courses every year from their freshman because they have the money to. But to be honest, I feel like if you take all these prep courses, it doesn't mean you have the will to do this on your own. Because, like, when you sit and take the SAT, like, you're not going to have someone sitting next to you telling you what to do. And even if they did teach you, you want to be able to say, like, believe in yourself and believe that you did it by on your own. Mm-hmm. So, like, I mean, I think I've even read before, like, the statistics that, like, if you're poor, it, like, determines how you do on the SAT. But I feel like, just because you're poor and you can't take classes, like, that doesn't – I don't think
Well,
that,
I think it's more than that. I think it reflects your community and the school that you
definitely.
Go to, you know. You can't take those expensive, you know, test-taking classes and that kind of thing. But I think that's what it's really reflecting. Mm-hmm. Do you think that standardized testing distorts the educational priorities? What?
I
had a question and you all don't have an answer.
As far as this, I think there's an emphasis on those three things, the reading, writing, and math. But that's not
all that life's about. Like Joey, he wants to go out, be a leader. Or I want to go out and work in the field or watch a mechanic do something or something like that. And a piece of paper can't have the same – there's no possible way that getting these hands dirty can happen through looking – at those three subjects.
But you have to start somewhere. You have to have a base. You have to have, like, some type of basic knowledge in reading, writing, math. I mean, that's all there is. Like, I mean, he might want to be a leader. You might want to be a mechanic, but don't you know need to know math? Don't you know how to write things to get your word out? Like, it's – I don't feel like – I don't like standardized tests, but I don't feel like it distorts education because, I mean,
distorts education priorities. That's
I still
a
feel
bit
like, like things like that, it is a priority. Like, I mean, when you go to school, what's the first thing you learn to do, read and write?
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that here in the United States, the U.S. System is lacking, do you think we should have a standardized curriculum?
No.
Do you feel like a universal curriculum is warranted?
No.
But
it depends on it because, well, we're from – my family's from Jamaica and my siblings, they had A-levels, right? Mm-hmm. And they were required to take certain classes. And then as you progress, you pick what you want. So basically what they're doing is they're setting a good base for everyone. And then as they – advance, then they pick what they want to do, and then they get really good at that area. Because I mean, it should be standardized to an extent. Because I mean, in seventh grade, I believe we took biology. Then we skipped around, and then ninth grade. Then we took biology again, and I forgot what I learned in seventh grade. So I mean, I think it needs to flow a little bit better. So you need to build on what we learned instead of bombarding us with like a certain subject. I mean, you can build through the years that we're in school, and then as we get to a certain level, then we can pick what we want.
I agree with that because like a lot of like in general foreign countries, like they have like amazing education, and I know what they do in India. Like rather than you take calculus 1 year, pre-calculus, you take one certain math subject each year, you learn a lot of math every year, and every year you're adding more to each thing you learn. So it's not like you learn geometry 1 year. You're learning geometry, algebra, pre-calculus at 1 year, and then you're broadening what you learn
and
every other year.
That's it. I have to have you all back next time. Many thanks. I always enjoy having you. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Many thanks to our panelists for the stimulating discussion. Audio copies of 411 Teen are available, and if you would like to participate in the program or suggest discussion topics, call toll-free 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. That's 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. To subscribe to the 411 Teen podcast, log on to WFSU.org.